and welcome back to the Sleep Like a Baby podcast. And this is my mini-series. So if you're new here, let me introduce myself. I'm Hannah and I'm a baby and toddler sleep coach, as well as a mum of two boys, and I'm based in London. So on this series, I'm just covering specific subjects. My normal content involves talking to various experts about all things to do with babies, sleep, and parenthood. But with this series, I wanted to do something a bit different and just do a deep dive into certain topics. And I was thinking I should probably call them the nap time sessions, because that's what I'm doing when my baby is napping. He's nearly one, and I find that a 20-30 minute episode is just about enough time to record and edit and put everything together. So thanks for being here, and let's talk today about overtiredness. In research for this episode, I thought I would do a quick Google and just see what information is currently being said about overtiredness, because, well, I've been a parent for about 5 years now, and the advice seems to be shifting even in that time period. And I was talking to my sister, whose oldest is 12, and other friends with teenage kids, and they were saying that things had shifted around how we talk about overtiredness, even in just this kind of one generation. And essentially, there was a lot of fear-mongering still about overtiredness. So I looked at one of the first hits that came up was from a sleep training website that sells kind of sleep guides, essentially Ferber. And they are saying in this that, well, for first of all, it's called overtiredness is the enemy of sleep. And they're saying basically that babies are extremely sensitive to tiredness, to wake windows being very specific lengths, and that even 5 minutes can make a difference. They actually use the word terrifying and incredible and all of this kind of language that honestly makes you just feel like your baby having a longer than usual period between nap one and nap two is just the worst thing that can happen for their sleep. And I just want to reassure you that it isn't. One of the reasons that particularly sleep professionals that are teaching parents all about self-settling or self-soothing, that sort of sleep training mindset of having maximum independence around sleep, well, a tired baby, a grumpy, cranky baby is going to find settling in that way a lot harder. So that's why sleep training culture zooms in on overtiredness so much. Actually, if you're supporting your child to fall asleep, it's not as big a deal. But we'll come on to that a bit later. But for now, I suppose I just want to say that, acknowledge why it is feared so much. And so the sleep trainers, so what are they saying about it? First of all, what are the signs of overtiredness? So they would say you might see like pulling knees to chest, hysterical crying, difficult to calm, a red face, arched back, frantic crying, being difficult to soothe, a rigid body, pushing you away, meltdowns, clumsiness, aggression, increased silliness, or hyperactivity, disinterest in food, can't focus, they become clingy, whining, all of those things. So some, you know, these are quite standard descriptions of overtiredness. Another website described basically of how hard, you know, resisting settling. So the idea is, the theory is that a baby who has been awake for too long a period is then flooded with cortisol and adrenaline and all of these chemicals that make them resist sleep. So there is, that's why I suppose we call it a kind of a wake window. There is this zone whereby your baby is tired, just tired enough to settle and not so tired that they're going to be fighting the sleep. Now, another website I found, which is quite a well-known brand, was saying that a major sign of overtiredness is napping for short periods of time, so cat napping, waking 45 minutes after bedtime, waking a lot in the night, waking early in the morning, and generally, yeah, just being harder to settle. And I really want to there is some truth to this, and there's also a lot of nonsense in this. So I want to debunk a bit, and I want to go in what is true. And as ever here at Little Nest, I want to have a more nuanced conversation, because we can't just say overtiredness is the worst thing that can happen to a baby or a toddler's sleep, and you must avoid it at all costs, or you are going to have terrible nights, terrible naps, and settling is going to be a nightmare. That is such a extremist view on overtiredness. But then also I've seen on the other end of the spectrum, particularly if you're really into the possums approach, or some very gentle sleep coaches will say overtiredness is not a thing at all. You do not need to worry about it. It is not a thing, and it has zero impact on how a child sleeps. And in fact, the possums approach, which if you're not aware of, I can send, put some information in the show notes about, but it is a really great philosophy and program around infant sleep. It came out of Australia. It's very evidence-based. There's things that I really agree with it, I'm very aligned with it on, and then other things that I don't quite agree is what I've seen in my practice. But I think for some babies, the possums approach works brilliantly, and I think is definitely worth anyone exploring, because essentially they focus on sleep pressure as the main driver of infant sleep, and therefore raising sleep pressure and getting a baby actually really, really tired in the possum's approach is the way to optimize sleep. And so there are people out there saying overtiredness is the worst thing in the world, and then other people saying it's not even a thing, and I'm here saying actually I think this is there's a grey area between these two camps, and as ever it depends on who your child is and what their sleep needs are. So I'm going to be looking at this as from the point of view of your baby or your toddler actually being an individual rather than just a robot fitting into a puzzle piece. This is actually how I would describe overtiredness. I see it actually as a state of dysregulation. I find the word dysregulated far more accurate when we're talking about infants who are struggling to settle, even though we know they are tired, or who are having fitful, kind of unsettled, wakeful sleep, and where they are just not calm and in that sleepy zone, even though we really strongly feel as parents they definitely need the sleep. And it looks different for all children. This is the thing. I think different babies and toddlers fall into different camps with this, depending on their temperament, their genetic makeup, their physiology, their sleep style, their sleep needs. And I'm going to read some information from Professor Helen Ball, who, if you haven't come across, is the UK sort of leading sleep expert, sleep researcher. She runs the Baby and Sleep Info Service, which is also known as BASIS, out of the University of Durham. She's very, I'm a huge fan, big fan of Professor Helen Ball. And she explains what overtiredness is really well. And essentially she describes it as what we tend to call overtiredness happens when an emotional state such as anxiety, distress, or fear blocks our ability to go to sleep even when we're really tired. So this is a survival response that helps us stay awake when we're in danger, no matter how tired we are. So I think that's a helpful way of looking at it, because we all, adults alike, have had experiences where we are really exhausted and we just cannot switch our brains off. That is what it is like for some children who have been awake for a long period of time. They are overstimulated. They are in a state of regulation where things just, they are not able to enter that rest and digest zone. So they've gone into fight or flight rather than rest and digest. So we all have sleep pressure. It's rising throughout the day. Sleep pressure is going to get you eventually. You cannot stay awake forever. And I think that's always helpful to remember, especially if we're dealing with epic toddler bedtimes. The sleep pressure will get to us all eventually, even if it's the parent that falls asleep before the toddler. But typically, the longer we stay awake, the higher our sleep pressure is, and therefore the easier it is to fall asleep. That's generally the theory. And I suppose that's the theory that the possum's system works with. And if we're looking at the sort of biology of sleep as well, sleep pressure is essentially the buildup of these chemicals called adenosines in the brain. And the longer we're awake, the more these chemicals build up. And then when we are asleep, the brain sort of filters them out again and they kind of reset to zero. So let's remember that baby sleep pressure builds far, far faster than adult sleep pressure. That's why obviously children nap. Also, when we fall asleep, we tend to cycle through different stages of sleep in each sleep cycle. So you will fall asleep in a lighter stage of sleep, then go into deeper sleep, deeper sleep, deeper sleep, until you are in rapid eye movement state, REM state. What can happen is if the brain is really, really exhausted, basically, when we are sleep deprived, we are, you know, it's not just normal tiredness, we are really, really in need of that sleep immediately. What will happen is that the brain can then skip the lighter stages of sleep and go straight into the deeper stages of sleep. And the theory is that with young children is that when those lighter stages of sleep come to are skipped and you're in a sleep cycle and you've gone straight into the deep cycle, a baby or a toddler then might wake after the end of that kind of disrupted sleep cycle, because it's not a normal 1-2-3-4 REM cycle, it's maybe a 3-4 REM cycle, and then they come to the end and they wake up and they are disorientated, they're upset, they're distressed. And especially if they've fallen asleep, which is likely if they're really, really tired, in a state of dysregulation, because they are tired, they are emotional, cranky, physically tired, overstimulated, all of those things. Remember, our children's brains are more sensitive to all of this external stimuli. So if they have woken from that sort of disjointed sleep cycle, they might then wake fully and become upset. Whereas a calm, more regulated child who's not super tired may be more likely, therefore, to get to the end of a normal sleep cycle, come to the end, rouse slightly, and put themselves back to sleep, which you might call self-settling or linking sleep cycles. They're just sort of going back into the next zone of sleep. If they're tired enough, if they're regulated, if they haven't got any needs like hunger or separation anxiety or discomfort in any way, they are going to go back into that next sleep cycle. And that's, we know from looking at sleep studies with adults that can happen, that those disjointed, overtired sleep cycles can be a thing. And that certainly does happen for some kids. So I've worked with some clients who, particularly if they're baby, they're going to bed and maybe they're zonking out quite quickly, maybe falling asleep in 5 or so minutes of a feed or a rock, or even like you're putting them into the cot and they are just zonking out. They're just settling themselves there because they're really tired. But then they might wake after 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and they will wake every 30, 40, 60 minutes, several times, right up until say 11 or 12 at night, when they might then start to do slightly longer stretches, but they might be waking very, very frequently. That can be, for some babies, a sign of overtiredness, of dysregulation. So it might not even be anything to do with the tiredness. And that's why I don't want to focus so much on that word, and why dysregulation feels more accurate, is because they might have had a really normal, appropriate amount of sleep for their day and for what they need, but perhaps they had a really stimulating evening or afternoon. Perhaps they were settling at a new childcare place, for example, or they had a play date in the afternoon, or you were stressed and there was an argument going on at home, or whatever it is, they've got an older sibling who is having a tantrum about something. There might just be something that's really like wound them up, and then you might have had to skip bedtime and rush bedtime, and they haven't really had time to process, and they're going through stuff. Maybe they're having lots of brain development at the moment. Maybe they're working on their language skills, or they're learning to walk, or just loads is going on for that little person. They might be recovering from a cold, they might be coming down with something, they, you know, all of this stuff that might be happening for them. And so they might just be that night in a bit of a state of overtiredness, but really it's dysregulation, it's overstimulation. they are just feeling those big feelings. And so they're just not able to calmly, peacefully kind of slip into sleep. And something that sleep researchers talk a lot about is what we call sleep latency, which is basically the length of time it takes you to fall asleep. And the optimal time is generally considered to be around 15 to 20 minutes to gently drift off. However, we have to take this with a huge pinch of salt, because not every child who is falling asleep in 5 minutes or less is overtired or dysregulated. For some kids, that's just how they fall asleep. For some adults, that is just how they fall asleep. And it is not a sign of a red flag or anything like that. Equally, some kids naturally take much longer than 20 minutes. So they might just be 30, 40 minute settlers. And again, that's not a sign of undertiredness. That's not a sign of low sleep pressure. It's just their temperament, their personality, and where they're at right now. So whilst it's good to have a sort of a general guide thinking, okay, 15, 20 minutes-ish to sort of drift off is about the average, if you're not seeing any other signs of dysregulation or issues with sleep, then you don't need to worry. Equally, waking in the night is not necessarily a sign of overtiredness or dysregulation. It can be completely age-appropriate and normal behavior. It can be a really good thing. It can be protective at certain ages and stages. Or it could be a sign of something else, like an undiagnosed allergy or some kind of physical discomfort that they're experiencing. Or it might be an emotional thing they're going through around separation anxiety or brain development or social development, all of those things. So we can never look at this as like it's one thing, right? Your baby's overtired. You've just got to get them X amount of sleep and you're on your way. Annoyingly, we need to be way more nuanced and individualized than that. And so you might have seen things online that say to avoid overtiredness, your baby needs to have X amount of hours sleep in the day, X amount of hours overnight, and that's the recipe to avoiding overtiredness. And the problem with this is that it just has no room at all for individual variation. And that is something we know that is a thing for all human beings, just as I'm sure you have slightly different sleep needs to your partner or your best friend. Babies are no different. So whilst, yes, as a general guide, 10 to 11 hours might be an average overnight, your child might actually need 12 to sleep soundly. That might be their optimal amount. Or they might be more of the 9, 10 hours a night. Obviously, not sadly, we're not talking about unbroken sleep, but you know, the general overnight sleep period might be 9 or 10 hours for your child. And that might not result in overtiredness at all. So you have to look at your child. How are they doing? Are they happy, content? Are they, you know, meeting their milestones? Are they, you know, obviously we would expect to see some emotional ups and downs throughout the day. They're going to get upset, have tantrums. That's normal. But are they relatively straightforward to soothe? How explosive are these emotions? And as you get to know your child and you tune into them over a period of months and years, obviously you're going to understand when they are at the point of just exhaustion, they're just knackered, they just need sleep now, and when, you know, when they're just being them and that's just their personality style. I think sadly, one of the downsides of this sort of fear around overtiredness though, is that a lot of people are putting their babies to bed really early because they are just petrified of this overtired state. And then a really common scenario that I see of people coming to work with me is that their children are going to bed at 6, 6:30, 7 p.m. falling asleep fine, but waking, you know, at 4 or 5 in the morning, and the internet has told them they're waking early because they're overtired, and the parent might then even try to do an earlier bedtime, and that just doesn't work. Equally though, I have worked with people whose babies are going to bed later and they are trying to sort of stretch out the sleep pressure, stretch out the wake windows, make them really tired so that they will sleep better overnight. That's often something you hear a lot from previous generations, especially. I know certainly my mum, whenever one of my kids has had a late night or not napped, she'll often say, well, at least they'll sleep well tonight. So I've worked with people where we're trying to do that, and it just does not work for that child. They are just getting dysregulated and overstimulated by all of that wake time. And therefore, they are then waking very frequently, or they are actually waking early. And then by just getting them a bit more sleep in 24 hours, we can sort of reset that early rising. And this is the difficulty, right? It just depends on where your child is at and what they need. How did they respond to sensory input? How did they respond to this feeling of tiredness? It's really interesting watching both of my boys because they could not be more different when it comes to overtiredness. My first was a sort of a classic, highly sensitive baby. He needed, I wouldn't say he was super high sleep needs, but he needed regular sleep. He got very sensitive to tiredness. He still does as a five-year-old. He really, you know, an early bedtime really was the key for him to get more sleep overnight. Going to bed later for him never ever results in him having a lie-in. It's quite the opposite. My second child loves a lie-in. Goes to bed a bit later, will sleep it off. Is very rarely overtired. I think he's been overtired a couple of times. And he's a baby that has a lot of overstimulation and a lot of dysregulation because he's a second born. And there's a lot of noise and TV and sounds and smells. And bedtime is not this kind of beautifully curated, calm, soothing time. It can be chaotic and full on. And sometimes, you know, obviously I wish for him, I could give him a more soothing bedtime, but he's got a big brother around who's got his needs and his energy going on. So despite all of that, though, because of who my youngest is and because of his temperament and his personality, he can withhold that in a way that I know that my first really wouldn't have been able to. I really needed to get him home. I needed to get him to bed early. He did not handle late nights. He needed catch-up days. He needed that sleep. My second rolls with it. And I don't think that's just because he's a second baby. I firmly believe that is just who he is because, well, I guess because I do this for a living and I see lots of other second, third babies who aren't able to roll with it in the same way. So overtiredness is a thing for some kids. It does make them more wakeful. It can do all of those things. But for others, it's not as big of a deal and they are not as impacted. And that's why we have to sort of put these generic wake windows and generic schedules and bedtimes in the bin. There's no room for them in this modern world. We know too much about infant development and sleep to think that they all will do an exact 2-hour wake window at this age, a 2.5-hour wake window at the next age, etc. And as for the kind of fear around, well, you know, my baby's gone 15 minutes over their normal wake window, I really would not worry about that stuff. The easiest way to correct overtiredness is just to give them a bit more sleep. The only time I see that sort of dysregulation becoming an issue where you do get those really disrupted evenings or really unsettled nights or really difficult settling sessions when you know your child is tired but they can't fall asleep is when there is a buildup of that over time. And I'm talking weeks rather than a day or two here. So if you have a child who is more sensitive to overtiredness and you can see actually they aren't regulated at bedtime, you might need to have, after a few busy days, for example, you might need to schedule into your kind of family timetable some catch-up days, some quiet days at home where they can just nap or have a few early nights just to reset. And often the reason why people do suggest early nights for children like that is also because the stages of sleep that we have are also influenced by our circadian rhythm. So we tend to have more deep sleep before midnight, and after midnight we spend more time in REM, which maybe I'll go into in another podcast, but essentially that sleep earlier in the evening can be more restorative. So if you're running on a sleep debt, this is the same for adults as well, by the way. That's why we say get to bed early rather than have a lie-in for yourself, because you might just get that more restorative sleep. I also just want to add on the catnapping front, one of the most common reasons a baby is having short naps, well, here they are. One, it's just age appropriate, especially in the first sort of 7 months of life. It is so normal to just need shorter naps. So sometimes it's just their age and stage. Another reason, the most common reason other than that, is that people are putting their babies down too early. They just don't have the high enough sleep pressure. They only need 30 minutes and they're awake again. And that's fine. If that works for you, that's fine. But I would also encourage you to stretch out that sleep pressure, to play with it, to see, actually, I know that the app or that guide says they can't be awake for more than 2 hours, 15 minutes or whatever it is. But I would say play with it, stretch it, see what actually works for your kid. Another reason why I would see those short naps would be that your child, a baby, just isn't ready to sleep independently yet. They need a bit more co-regulation. So a contact nap is, if you find that a contact nap or a pram nap with motion generally makes them sleep longer, then that might just be what they need to nap well at the moment. And if you're putting them down in a cot or a floor bed and they're just waking up after 20 or 30 minutes, then independent sleep just may not be what they need right now. I also think it's important to remind ourselves that long naps aren't necessarily better or superior to short naps. There is no evidence to say that all children need long naps, and that it comes back to this idea, right, that overtiredness is the worst thing ever for all babies, for all children, and that we must do everything we can to avoid it. For some children, particularly those with low sleep needs, a long nap can be a bit of a disaster. We wouldn't want to chase that because it's going to make settling harder. So if you take one thing away from this podcast, I hope it's this. Your child is an individual. Yes, some kids are way more sensitive to dysregulation than others, and it might impact their sleep. For others, they can just roll with it, catch up on a bit of sleep, and it's not a big deal. If you think that your kid might be struggling a bit with dysregulation, you can experiment. You can see, right, what happens if I spend a few quieter days at home doing contact naps, maybe doing an earlier bedtime? Let's see what happens. Remember, we can never make anyone sleep more than they physically need to anyway, unless, of course, you're going down a dodgy route of drugging people, which no one's suggesting you do. So we can't make anyone sleep more than they need to. If you experiment with that and you explore, okay, let's see, maybe they might be a bit dysregulated. Maybe I could get a more calming bedtime routine. Maybe I could get a calming pre-nap routine. Maybe I need to work on that sort of sensory preparation for sleep and help my child settle in a calm way. Maybe I need to offer more support or just think about their sensory environment around sleep. If that makes a positive difference, then you know, okay, they were a little bit dysregulated, or they are a child that is sensitive to that. So that's something I've got to be mindful as a parent. If it makes no difference, or if in fact it makes sleep worse, then you know your kid isn't overtired. It's fine. That just might, their sleep situation right now might just be who they are, where they're at, what's going on, or there might be something else happening. I think the freedom and the confidence to experiment, to explore, is really important. And it's okay to get it wrong. It's okay to try something and find out, oh, actually, that wasn't the one. I know it's scary because it's our sleep that we're messing with. And look, no one wants to take risks when it comes to your own sleep because it's important. But this is just me. I'm a coach. It's my job to kind of coach you along, to encourage you to have an open mind, to give stuff a go, and just to say, when you look at your child's individual needs and your individual needs and have the confidence to try new things, good things can come. Okay, we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for being here again this week, and get in touch if there are any specific sleep topics you are really keen for me to dive deeper into. Oh, and if you want any more one-to-one support, come and check out my website. I'll put a link in the show notes, and there's various sleep guides, webinars, masterclasses, etc. that you can download and access straight away.